J. Slideways Live, courtesy of racesontheweb.com. Here is your host, TJ Buffenbarger.
Just outside of Grand Rapids, Michigan, for another edition of TJ Slideways Live. Of course, all of our guests appear on the Rocket Headers Hotline. If you want to interact with us tonight, you can email your question to TJ at TJSlideways.com. Send it to our Twitter account at TJ Slideways or visit the Facebook page for TJSlideways.com. And the season's winding down, and our first segment is actually going to kind of involve you, the listeners, and the readers of TJSlideways.com. We're going to talk about a little bit what you guys and everyone out there at Red enjoyed this year the most. We went back and looked at some statistical things and weeded some things out and did some filtering and some data mining, and you'll be kind of interested to see what you thought were the most interesting races so far of 2013. And then in our second segment, we're going to have Dave Argerbright on. Dave is just coming out with a book about the ASA's Rex Robbins. He also has a couple of editions out of Sprint Car Racing Fiction, which is going to be a topic we're going to discuss how you get into the fiction writing world after being a news journalist and a storyteller over the years of a truthful story, you know, not truthful, but actual world events, and to turn to this fiction series that's been a success. And we'll also talk a little bit about racing on television. And then our third segment tonight, Chase Stockton is going to join us. We're going to talk about his victory at the Hall of Fame Classic and how his small family-owned team is getting it done on the USAC National Sprint Car Tour. So Dave Argerbright and Chase Stockton later on in the show. But every year, we've started this for the past 2 years. It's something we've done different than we did the first decade or so. This website's always been kind of an evolution of racing news. It's kind of evolved and grown over the years, and we have a relatively small staff, and what we do is it became a point where we'd come out through the year, and we'd try to add new features and new stuff to the website during the year, and it became too cumbersome to keep up with that and all the racing news we were trying to keep up on and all the results and such. So what we're going to do, what we started, is what we called Codevember. And what we did is we take every November, the whole month is wide open. This is when you're going to see new stuff on the show, new stuff on the website. Some of it's bound to fail, including like this first segment probably telling you about this, but it's kind of like a warning. It's a little heads up. We're going to be experimenting over the next 30 days, starting over the weekend, and we're going to be trying out new code, new things on the show, and we're going to see how they go, new podcast ideas, and we're going to see how you, the reader, reacts to them, how the electronic world acts with them, and make sure we don't crash the whole thing, which we usually do a couple times during Codevember. So we just want to warn you that we are going to be in experimental mode for the next 31 days or so after tonight. It's really exciting. This works out real well because basically everything that's working on the last day of November goes into production. Anything that isn't working goes onto the back burner. We do this again in the first couple of weeks of March. We will experiment again with some new things, but that's where we're going to lock in. And part of that this year has been trying to already plan out our 2014 schedule. And how I get asked a lot, how do we choose what races we talk about on the website and what topics we go to and for the show, who we have on and such. And a lot of it has to do with what you, the reader and the listener, react to when we post it. And we throw different things out throughout the whole year. And we've over the past 2 years, have started filtering down the most popular stuff to be right up front accessible. But yeah, we still filter through and post everything and get you all of the information you need. It just might not appear right on the front page. And we went through, and it was kind of interesting to see what you, the reader, really reacted to. A lot of it isn't surprising. Some of it is. And our geographical reach has expanded a bit again this year. Going back out to Knoxville was a huge coup for the website. 10 years was far too long to be away from that event. And you, the reader, reacted to that very well. Everything at Oskaloosa, you know, sans Tony Stewart's broken leg, we filtered that out. Those are the kind of things we filter out to not skew these results. But all the Oskaloosa stuff and all the Knoxville stuff was off the charts, just what we expected. So that's going to come back for next year. I'm continually impressed by everyone's reaction to the King's Royal. And we're going to try something a little bit different next year, I think. I think as of right now, if anything, you know, unless something changes, but major changes, we're going to do the entire King's Royal weekend. Bob will likely go do Indiana Sprint Week, and then we'll go do the King's Royal event. But we're going to do the whole weekend because you, the reader, have really reacted to us being there, and you want us to be there both days, so we're going to be there both days. But in turn, we're going to do the Kokomo SmackDown as well. And the reason SmackDown has done well for us, but it hasn't done like Knoxville numbers or anything, but I think we could get it there. I think that event has some potential to be the real non-wing, you know, central event of the summer. And I think that will be something that we will make a cornerstone for the future. Of course, we're going back to the Canadian Sprint Car Nationals. And the Little 500 every year just does really well. I'm amazed at the interest. Of course, this year we did the Little 500 fan forum with Dave Argerwright and a few other people. And it really went over well. But it continues to be a cornerstone for the site. So that'll be back. Some other things that I found were kind of interesting is any Sprint Under and NRA show co-sanctioned together really drew a lot of interest, which is interesting to me. There's a couple SOD events, a couple NRA events in the area that do pretty well for us, but every one of those co-sanctioned events, you wanted to know about it. And every time those two groups got together, the interest nearly doubled for each group. It's kind of some interesting statistical things. Oh, the Michigan Traditional Sprints in the area. You wonder where their most popular events were. It's kind of an interesting breakdown. Actually, Cherry Speedway and Crystal Motor Speedway, the two most popular and most read events, but about events that were on the website. Now, Silver Crown, the Silver Crown series has kind of been in decline car count wise. And actually, for the first year, saw its numbers dwindle in reader size. But you still managed to put the Hoosier 100 and basically all the dirt mile races up in the top echelon, along with, of course, the Four Crown. You know, basically anything we did at Eldora was, you know, once again off the charts. The readers really love Eldora, and they want to know about whether it was Ohio Speed Week, the Sprintacular, the World Outlaw Spring Event, the King's Royal, the Four Crown, whatever it might be. It seems like every time we hit Eldora Speedway, there's always a peaked interest. Even the SOD NRA co-sanctioned show did really good numbers over the year. And another series that drew your interest all season, it seems like no matter where the race is, the Buckeye Outlaw Sprint Series. Anytime, especially when they're nearby our home base, but even when they stretched out in the Webster, Pennsylvania, their numbers made a mark on the website. So that, you know, that's something we take into consideration. Of course, Kokomo Speedway, World of Outlaws shows, their Sprint Week show, their SmackDown show. Basically, every Sunday night was a must-read for everyone on the website. And it's become such a hallmark of, like, the heavy hitters on Sunday. It's where everyone goes, and it's the hot place to be. That was something that resonated with everybody. And you go through this stuff, and you go through these numbers. It's really interesting. I consider it kind of a litmus test of what may be going well, what people want to read about and such. And there's still a lot of local and weekly racing on here, which is good. Several big shows at Fremont Speedway still hit and resonate well. Attica Raceway Park, the anniversary show in May, the double feature show, that one resonated with people. One interesting kind of local S regional show that really resonates, even though we haven't been there in multiple years, is the Toledo Speedway fastest short track in the world. That's another one that did really well over the 2013 season. The All-Star IRA show at Wilma. A lot of co-sanctioned things doing very well for race fans. A lot of series try to stay away from it. They're afraid of alienating cars that might follow the whole tour and might not be able to make a feature when there's 10 more good cars there. A lot of groups will shy away from that. But when it seems to happen, the fans love it and they gravitate towards it and they want to know what's happening about it. Another event I'd like to talk about that has really grown with the website growth, and we've seen it, is the Williams Grove National Open. And this one nationally has just exploded, I think, especially over the past 10 years or so. It was always a big regional event, and it always had national lore, but it seems like the national attention, the interest from readers has just exploded over the past 4 or 5 years especially. And that one's on the short list for next year. Basically, what we do is we've got it down to about 40 to 50 races, and we're going to weed that down even further because I would love to do all 50 of these. But to do them, I'd have to be in two places at the same time to get to half of them. And the other half is, you know, there are budgets and I do have a real job to deal with during the week. So we take this list that you're interested in, we weed it down somewhat, and we try to pick some hallmark weeks where we definitely, you know, gear the show and the website around that particular event. And then we try to fill in other events at different venues around it. And then that's how we come up with the schedule. So you guys definitely, as readers, drive what we do here. So keep that in mind when you click on a story, or maybe if you're interested in something we're doing here. And that's why I wanted to take the first segment tonight to talk about this, to stress this, is anytime you listen to something on here or this reaction, maybe you're listening to a podcast, all that affects what we do the next year and where we go and what we're going to do with this website. And it's as much yours as it is mine in that regard, because whatever, you know, you guys are reading about is what we're going to go cover. And we have a short list for next year. We're slowly weeding some stuff out. And a lot of it might not be, you know, weed something out. It might just be logistics. In fact, most of the time it is. Every event on here looks enjoyable to me that we have narrowed down for next year. And I really hope we can pull a couple of these different ones off. We want to go to a couple different places, and I'm hoping we can get to them, because I'm guessing probably 4 to 5 last I counted on this list. The year's still not done, but for us going to the races, actually, it is. And there are probably 4 or 5 venues on here that I haven't been to yet that are starting to gain interest from our readers. And I really want to take a couple of them in, because you've shown that you want to find out about them. And that's enough ammo for me to go out and try to do it. And hopefully we can make it happen, the vacation, the logistics, and all of it works out so we can do it. And it's been an up and down year emotionally for everyone. And yet, I almost feel guilty saying it, but it's been one of the more enjoyable seasons between all those heartaches that I've had in doing this. And I think it's just because we planned it out like this. This is how I'm not saying we didn't have a plan before, but we do have a definitive plan now where we're going to go and why and purpose. And this show is a big real part of that. You guys have been, as listeners, been really reactive to it and been really happy to keep doing the show. That's why we're keep doing it into the winter. And we're still drumming up guests. We have enough track champions and series champions, I think, to keep us busy into December. So we're just going to keep it going from there. But I just want to give you a little insight on how we plan stuff here at tjslideways.com. And it's not just kind of haphazardly. We analyze numbers. We go over logistics and statistics and what you, the reader, are interested in, what we enjoy, and in turn, what we enjoy to go do. Because if we go to an event that we're not enjoying, we're not doing service to you, because it's probably going to come out in the writing, in the podcasting and everything else, to do the photos. But if we really love each one of these events we're going to, and we go to ones that we're enjoying, it comes out. And I think in a way, highlighting those events, hopefully we'll get some more people to come out, and it just makes racing more successful. So we hope to continue that next year. Already starting to look into the 2014 schedule and looking forward to it. So that's our first segment tonight. Just give me a little insight of how TJSlideways.com works. So we're going to take a commercial break. When we come back, Dave Argabright. This is an interview we've been chasing down for a couple of weeks. Dave and I have not been able to mess schedules. Finally getting on this. We're going to talk Sprint Car Salvation. We're going to talk about the new book about Rex Robbins, Sprint Car Television, racing in general. We'll probably get some side chatter in as well. So Dave Argabright in the next segment. You're listening to TJ Slideways Live here on racesontheweb.com.
Engine Pro, the nation's leading specialty engine parts distributor, featuring name brand engine parts and custom engine kits sold by professional rebuilders. With 29 distribution centers providing engine builders and machine shops across the country with a full line of brand name internal engine components at competitive prices. Engine Pro is committed to building the success of their customers by offering competitive pricing, innovative programs, and knowledgeable sales representatives. For more information, visit our website at engineproparts.com. It pays to know a pro. Engine Pro.
If you're looking to add a little edge to your racing program, repair your engine, maybe even look into a new engine, Bailey Racing Engines of Coldwater, Michigan is a fine supporter of TJSlideways.com. Visit them online at BaileyEngines.com or call them at 517-278-8488.
Tired of having black headers that rust and wear out too quickly? Then you need to get some Rocket Headers. Rocket Header produces exhaust for 360 and 410 sprint car engines, dirt and pavement, with mufflers and turnouts. Stainless steel construction, TIG welding, and polished finish make Rocket Headers the best value in the open wheel racing exhaust market. For more information on where to buy Rocket Headers, visit their official website at rocketheaders.com.
TJ Buffenbarger here for the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville, Iowa. The Hall of Fame continues to promote the future of sprint car racing by preserving its past. The museum is located in Knoxville, Iowa, and is open Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Saturday and Sunday from noon to 5 p.m. On race nights, the museum will stay open until 7 o'clock. Don't forget, race fans, one of the best ways that you can support the Hall of Fame is buying a membership. They start at just $25, and a basic membership gets you and a guest free admission to the museum and a 10% discount off in the museum store. Also, check with the Hall of Fame for suite tickets on the second and third floor for the 2013 Knoxville season. You can get information on all of this by going to SprintCarHOF.com, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame.
If you're looking for new or used shocks or repair for your shocks or bump stop kits, make sure to check out Slade Shock Technology. Eric Slade has experience from sprint cars to NASCARs. He was in shocks before it was trendy, and now that's the hot thing in racing. You need to get your shock program in shape. Visit www.sladeshocktechnology.com for everything they offer. Slade Shock Technology. Get with the program. Get your shocks in shape.
There's a buzz in the bleachers, a rumble on the pavement, and the sweet smell of sprint car speed is in the air as Muncie Racing brings you the fastest short track event on earth. Watch as the most daring lead foots in the land stand on the gas and rock it around one of the fastest half miles in America. There are records to be broken and racing royalty in the pits. It's a flat-out, foot-on-the-floor sprint car fiesta, and you can't find this brand of adrenaline-soaked action anywhere else.
Friday Night Thunder returns to Oschwegan Speedway for the 2013 season, featuring the Corpac Sprint Car Series, Thunderstocks, Mini Stocks, and Bombers every Friday night. For more information, call 888-720-7223 or visit OschweganSpeedway.com for more information. Welcome back to TJ Slideways Live here at RacesOnTheWeb.com. My next guest has just released a book about Rex Robbins, the founder of the American Speed Association, and also has been penning a fictional series recently that just had its 100th edition and is available on a couple of books, Sprint Car Salvation. Also, award-winning writer and television analyst Dave Argabright joining us on the line. And Dave, we've waited too long to do this, and I'm really glad you took time out to join us tonight.
Well, it's glad to be here, TJ. I really enjoy working with you and appreciate everything you've done up there through the years, and it's great to be here.
And let's talk about the new project first, just in time out for the holidays. And this one, I think, is going to draw a wide range of interest from race fans, because especially in this area, because it covers the American Speed Association. And when we were just talking off the air about the reverence that series had, and do you still find that when you travel the racetrack, people, even that might not be associated with stock cars, still talk about what ASA is and was?
Oh, yes. It's the words I would use, you know, are they're sort of intangible things like aura and mystique. But other stock car series have done similar things, but nobody's ever really captured that element exactly right as ASA did, and their legacy is just so enduring. As you said, people still talk about it. They still talk about the experience and how good it was. And it was maybe one of those perfect storm things where they had the right time with the right product, with just the right people, with Bob Seneca, Mike Eddy, Butch Miller, Dick Trickle, that group of guys, they created so much interest among grassroots racers and fans here in the Midwest that I'm just amazed yet today at how long it's lasted. You know, that's been really their heyday for that group was in the 80s and 90s, and that's 20, 30 years ago, and people still have very powerful memories.
And when you went to do this book, was this an idea you had for a while to do this one, or did this one come pretty quickly?
Well, it when I first began writing in 1980, in the very early 80s, it was in Anderson, Indiana, and Rex and the ASA guys had their office locally. And I'm not sure how I connected, I guess through my writing in the newspaper, but they started inviting me to go to lunch with them. And there was ASA was small as far as the front office at the time, maybe four or five people. And Rex and Becky and Steve Stubbs and I would tag along. And Rex really was one of the first most influential people in my career because he educated me, whether he intended to or not, he educated me on the business side of racing. And listen to him talk about how it works between racers and promoters and sanctioning bodies and sponsors. And he really got it. And there were some fundamental things that he taught me that yet today when I watch somebody doing something out in the industry, I'm shaking my head saying, that's not going to work because of, and I recall something Rex taught me, and sure enough, it doesn't work, you know, over time. So when Rex approached me in August of 12, I guess it was, and he said, you know, I've really wanted to do a book for a while, but I need some help, and, you know, I already had a couple big projects going, and I didn't really have time, but I just have so much respect for Rex as a person and what he's done that I said, listen, if you got time for me, I'll find a way to make this thing work. And that's really how it came about.
And as you mentioned, it's going to have a wide range of people interested because ASA had their hands in sprint car racing. They promoted racetracks. They had the series. But that stock car series is so iconic. Where did you go for most of the material of the book? Was it just strictly talking to Rex? Or who else did you inquire with to create the book?
Well, it was primarily Rex because it's his autobiography. It's not really a history of ASA in terms of a race-by-race breakdown or season-by-season breakdown. It does have a pretty thorough appendix that has a lot of statistics, and then there's a detailed listing of every ASA national race that was ever ran. So it's got some of that, but it's really mostly in Rex's voice, so he is probably 80-90% of it. Some other people, Steve Stubbs, Mark Gundrum, who worked for him in later years, a couple of other people really helped me and Rex fill in the blanks and some empty spaces where Rex wasn't quite sure of how something happened. And, you know, you can't remember every meeting you're in, every discussion that you have. And we had some, luckily, some support people to help fill in the blanks.
And how's the interest been so far about the book as far as, you know, because the series being so, you know, iconic? How's reaction been to the book so far pre-release?
So far, it's pretty good. We had a lot of pre-orders, and people seem to be excited about it, which is a good thing. You know, in trying to promote a book, it helps if it's an exciting subject that people like. And so I feel good about it. I think that it's going to go well. And frankly, you know, just a small vignette. Today, Rex has been fighting some health issues, and he hasn't been doing very well. But he's on the mend, and he's doing a little better. And he's back home. He was in the hospital last week. And today, you know, I just got the books yesterday from the printer. Today from the printer. So today I got some cartons, took them up to Rex, and he's been feeling poorly. And to take that first book in and to show it to him, and he liked it, he was excited. I don't care if I sell another book. I got my reward just on the look on his face when he saw his book, and it made him happy. So that was just a great moment for me personally.
I don't know what I can say much more to add to that. That was an awesome story. So Dave Arkwright joining us, of course, Rex Robbins' autobiography. When will it be available for people to get their hands on?
Well, we're shipping it now. The books were printed last Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and they began shipping Monday. I'm all twisted around my dates, and that's today. So that just this morning they began. A few people, I'm not sure how they did it at the fulfillment house up in Minnesota, but they must have gotten some out on Friday or Saturday because I saw on Facebook that a couple of people had received theirs, which amazed me. But, I mean, they got theirs before I got mine. But, you know, so we are shipping them right now. They're available now.
All right, and you can go to DaveArgabright.com for more information on that. Another thing that you've been doing is the fictional series and Sprint Car Salvation in the books, and of course the series in Sprint Car Midget Magazine. And now you've got 100 of those, over 100 now, under your belt. How much fun is that series to write still, even after over 100 installments of it?
It is fun. It's still totally fun. I mean, it's like anything else. There are times when, amidst a really busy schedule, I have to carve out a day or two to write an episode, and it's hard sometimes because you're just jammed up with work. But once I can kind of get myself settled down and quieted down and slip into Jimmy's world, it is just fun, and I can't describe it to somebody who's never done it, but it's just, you know, it's not easy. You have to work at it, but it's fun to sit there, and as you're writing, different ideas come into your head, and it becomes, you know, enjoyable to just see where this thing goes. I don't have a predetermined plot, you know, for each episode or even for a season, and we just kind of start out with Jimmy and his friends and sort of put him in some different situations and kind of see what's going to happen. And I've tried to learn a lot and try to get better at it, but it's I hate to say this because I do love doing these books, but besides that, it's probably the most enjoyable single thing that I've ever done as a writer, just because it's different for me and it's just fun.
And I'm kind of surprised you don't have a roadmap for it. I kind of thought you might have it planned two or three episodes ahead, but to be able to do that with no roadmap to me is remarkable, especially with all the different stories, because as you get into racing more, you get your own stories and other people's stories. And man, I think half the time we spend away from the racetrack is dealt with stories and, and trying to pick like what ones you approximately base something on or something has got to be it's got to be difficult to pick which things you kind of base stuff on.
Yep. And people ask me sometimes, is Jack Harvey, is that so-and-so, or is, you know, so-and-so, is that, you know, and the honest answer is, and this is the truth, no character in the series is based on any one person in real life, but it's sort of a composite, almost a stereotype of various people that I've known through the years with different characteristics that made them interesting. And I sort of, you know, I had to stumble into this. I had never written fiction before, and I made some mistakes in the very early chapters that I tried to overcome a little bit. But you have to let the character sort of emerge. You can't have this rigid idea of exactly what that person is, because most human beings, they're multidimensional in their personality. They're very, very complex. And so you have to let your characters become that, too. And I had to learn that kind of the hard way, but hopefully, you know, I sort of picked it up and it got a little better.
Dave Arbright joining us. And, of course, there's two editions in a hardcover that you can order of the fictional story Sprint Car Salvation. When do you think a third edition of that might come out? How many more chapters ahead do you have to get before you publish the next year?
We're still there. I mean, this book will come out on December 1st. I'm in the final stages now of handing it to the printer for final production, and we should have it no problem by December 1st, just in time for Christmas. It's sort of become a Christmas tradition for a lot of people to buy it as a gift, and I caught on to that, and I felt like, wow, I really need to pedal a little bit and make sure I get another one out for Christmas, because people were actually sending me emails saying, are you going to have a third one ready for my husband for Christmas? And, you know, so I felt like, you know, I really need to make sure we do that and try to keep it going.
That's a really neat idea, and I enjoy it very much as well. So Sprint Car Salvation 3 will be coming out in December. I really enjoyed the second edition of it, and I've read both editions. Oh, I've read everything Dave's done, so great, you know, reading. And so now let's move on and talk about racing. I mean, it's what we do. With your television exploits, you've gotten to travel around and do a lot of things. Maybe you haven't gotten to do writing and such. In your travels, what do you find right now in short track racing, especially, that's what's working, and what can we do a little bit better? We might not necessarily be doing poorly, but you think as a whole we could do a little bit better, but what also seems to be working when you travel around?
Well, one thing that's working, I think, and it's pretty hard to describe this because I'm not sure I completely understand it myself, but somehow we have really created this following of intensely loyal fans and racers. because it seems like no matter what happens, no matter how dismally a show is presented or whatever, people forgive because they're there the next week, you know? This hardcore group of core fans, we have cultivated that, and they're very, very loyal. So racing has done well in that regard. What I think we haven't done well, and I don't want to indict everybody with this, but for the most part, I think the typical short track show is far too long. There's too much dead time. It's a little redundant. You can go to a lot of weekly tracks, and if you're really honest, you can go and sit down and you start to feel like, you know what, I've seen this movie before. You know, three heats and a feature, three heats and a feature, and then we go home. And you know what I mean? One thing we don't do well is the presentation. I think, and I don't mean we all need great big giant graphic screens. That'd be great, but it's out of the reach of most short tracks. I just mean shaking up the program a little bit to sort of keep people interested, keep them engaged a little.
And who do you think's doing a good job of that right now? Do you have a couple people, a couple things that you saw during the year that did well at that?
You know, that's a great question. I can't really think of anybody. You know, Jim Hanks with Must See Racing, and a qualifier here, I do the television for Jim for his broadcast. But one thing I really like about working those shows is that they make a concerted effort before to try to bring something that engages people, like in the fairway, the walkway behind the grandstands, or some concourse where people can congregate. He makes an intentional effort to have a show car, to have sponsor booths, to have people engaging fans there. And I think that's very important, because I think if we're just sort of expecting people to buy a ticket and walk in and sit down, I don't think that's enough anymore, particularly with younger kids. You got to get them seated in a race car. You got to get them touching that thing and getting up close and feeling it, and maybe have an autograph session to bring the drivers up in the grandstands. And I like that kind of thing, because I think it's fundamental and I think it's important. Jim's not the only group doing it, but those are the group. That's who I've done a lot of races, and I've always noticed how well people respond to that kind of thing.
Dave Argabright joining us here, and one thing about the ice, the hands-on part of it, and one of the things I saw is when they brought the big block modifieds to Eldora, you know, about 10 years ago. The most popular thing I saw in the whole midway was the show car, because people had never, you know, a lot of people had never seen the cars in person before, and yep, they wanted to go see one. So there's one. So it equates to that. That makes sense. That's a good connection there. One thing I get asked about a lot, and I don't necessarily have good answers for, but you're involved in the television side of it. I get asked all the time, we love the taped races, when are we going to see live television again? And I try to explain it in a nutshell. It's just the television world's changed so much since we saw a lot of motorsports on TV, a diverse range of motorsports on TV live. What do you think? Do you think we're ever going to get back to where we see a lot of short track racing on TV live? Or do you think the taped and maybe on-demand online stuff is going to be more the direction we see it going in?
I think strictly for economics, the tape delayed races and maybe the lower budget internet shows, those will be what we will see more of. To do a real live production with a network quality, you know, is pretty expensive. And the ratings and the advertiser support, it's pretty tough to make that work at this point. However, the good news is I think that the truck race last year at Eldora on a Wednesday night, that thing was live and it had an enormous audience. I think the opportunity is there. If somebody could produce a show, even a tape delayed show, on a major network that's in a lot of homes, if you can build that following like Wednesday Night Thunder had, you know, right along the lines of what we were talking about earlier with ASA, ESPN's Thunder was a phenomenon all its own, too, and people still talk about it 20, 25 years later. Just the timing and the presence it had on a Wednesday night or a Thursday night or whatever, it was very cool. And I still think there's a whole lot of race fans that on a Tuesday or Wednesday night would love to tune in on television to see a short track race somewhere.
Dave Argabright joining us, and I would agree with that. I mean, the Thunder thing and the ASA thing's a nice comparison, because we were talking off the air. I still go around and people talk about you know, the stars and the cars of ASA around here. I'm in the middle of like ASA country. So it's amazing how that held. And like you said, Thursday Night Thunder is appointment viewing. When I talk to people at work about sprint car racing, they often said, oh yeah, we used to watch it on Thursday. And, you know, it baffles me a little bit, I guess, on if there was that strong of a following, made that impact, how something like that can decrescendo and just kind of like, you know, dwindle a bit and not keep that momentum.
Yeah, and what happened in that deal, people throw USAC under the bus and say, you guys had ESPN shows and you blew it, and that's not true. It wasn't anything USAC did wrong that caused that to go away. That was just the market forces of television changing right before our eyes. And it just, you know, the production money dried up, the networks became more focused on ready-made programs that they didn't have to pay the programming for, you know, the production for. And ESPN, frankly, moved on to bigger projects. You know, they began doing live football, live basketball, live baseball, and that, you know, those ratings are just simply stronger than racing. That's just the way it is.
But what's interesting is when anyone tries to go and build a network, what's the first sport they turn to, it seems like?
Well, yeah, that's funny, isn't it? I'm very hopeful that what Lucas Oil is doing with MAB TV could have some really good implications for short track racing. I mean, they're devoted on making that network work. They need more homes, and one of the tools they're using, and I'm surprised that hasn't, you know, been more publicized and it hasn't created more of a buzz at this point in October, is that the Chili Bowl in January is going to be live on Saturday night with a top flight production on MAV TV. And guys like me who live in the suburbs that where I'm on Comcast, I can't get MAV. And, you know, even though I'm going to be working that show, I want to get MAV TV. I'm almost ready to get a dish just so I can get MAV. And that's what they're hoping for. They're hoping race fans would say, you know what, I'll get a dish or whatever so I can watch the Chili Bowl live. They're going to have a late model race, a Lucas Oil late model race from East Bay live in February. I mean, the opportunity is there for them to build a network, you know, with some live racing coverage. It's just like you said, it seems like these guys that are trying to build a network, racing always seems to be the place they start, isn't it?
Yeah, it's amazing how history repeats itself.
Isn't it, though?
Yeah.
Yes.
What's old is new again. So, Dave, if someone's interested in getting a book or finding out more about it, then go to the website. But where else can they find information about it?
Well, the best way, if you don't remember how to spell my last name, if you Google Jack Hewitt book, I think that my website's the first one that comes up if it's still, you know, ordered correctly.
But I would hope so.
At any rate, we also sell at Coastal181.com. They have my books all in stock. The National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum has most of my books. I don't have a lot of retailers. Racing sort of a specialized niche, and I do the vast bulk of my sales through the Internet.
And, Dave, well, we really appreciate your work, and thank you for taking time out to talk again. We're going to have to do this again in the spring, too, because I have a lot of fun getting your insight on everything, and appreciate taking time out, and best of luck, and we've got some holidays coming up, so if I don't talk to you before then, have a great holiday season as well.
Well, you too, TJ. Thanks for everything you do, and like I said before, thanks for having me on. We waited too long, and I want to do this again.
All right. Well, we'll have to do that. Thanks, Dave.
All right, TJ, thank you.
Dave Argerbright joining us on the air, so don't make sure to pick up that book. That is going to be a great read about the ASA. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Chase Stockton is going to talk about his win at Canyon Speedway Park. You're listening to TJ Slideways Live here on RacesOnTheWeb.com.
Engine Pro, the nation's leading specialty engine parts distributor, featuring name brand engine parts and custom engine kits sold by professional rebuilders. With 29 distribution centers providing engine builders and machine shops across the country with a full line of brand name internal engine components at competitive prices. Engine Pro is committed to building the success of their customers by offering competitive pricing, innovative programs, and knowledgeable sales representatives. For more information, visit our website at engineproparts.com. It pays to know a pro. Engine Pro.
If if you're looking to add a little edge to your racing program, repair your engine, maybe even look into a new engine, Bailey Racing Engines of Coldwater, Michigan is a fine supporter of TJSlideways.com. Visit them online at BaileyEngines.com or call them at 517-278-8488.
Tired of having black headers that rust and wear out too quickly? Then you need to get some Rocket Headers. Rocket Header produces exhaust for 360 and 410 sprint car engines, dirt and pavement, with mufflers and turnouts. Stainless steel construction, TIG welding, and polished finish make Rocket Headers the best value in the open wheel racing exhaust market. For more information on where to buy Rocket Headers, visit their official website at rocketheaders.com.
TJ Buffenbarger here for the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville, Iowa. The Hall of Fame continues to promote the future of sprint car racing by preserving its past. The museum is located in Knoxville, Iowa, and is open Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Saturday and Sunday from noon to 5 p.m. On race nights, the museum will stay open until 7 o'clock. Don't forget, race fans, one of the best ways that you can support the Hall of Fame is buying a membership. They start at just $25, and a basic membership gets you and a guest free admission to the museum and a 10% discount off in the museum store. Also, check with the Hall of Fame for suite tickets on the second and third floor for the 2013 Knoxville season. You can get information on all of this by going to SprintCarHOF.com, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame.
If you're looking for new or used shocks or repair for your shocks or bump stop kits, make sure to check out Slade Shock Technology. Eric Slade has experience from sprint cars to NASCARs. He was in shocks before it was trendy, and now that's the hot thing of racing. You need to get your shock program in shape. Visit www.sladeshocktechnology.com for everything they offer. Slade Shock Technology. Get with the program. Get your shocks in shape.
There's a buzz in the bleachers, a rumble on the pavement, and the sweet smell of sprint car speed is in the air as Muncie Racing brings you the fastest short track event on earth. Watch as the most daring lead foots in the land stand on the gas and rocket around one of the fastest half miles in America. There are records to be broken and racing royalty in the pits. It's a flat-out, foot-on-the-floor sprint car fiesta, and you can't find this brand of adrenaline-soaked action anywhere else.
Friday Night Thunder returns to Oshwegan Speedway for the 2013 season, featuring the Corpac Sprint Car Series, Thunder Stocks, Mini Stocks, and Bombers every Friday night. For more information, call 888-720-7223 or visit OshweganSpeedway.com for more information. Welcome back to TJ Slideways Live here on RacesOnTheWeb.com. My next guest, just checking in Las Vegas, Nevada to take a couple of days away after claiming the Hall of Fame Classic feature victory on Saturday night at the Canyon Speedway Park. And Chase Dockin, what is it like to roll in the Las Vegas with a race car hauler straight off a victory, man?
It's a little different. It's definitely different. This is my first time being out here, and it's most definitely kind of hard to find a parking spot.
I imagine so. Well, congratulations. You picked up your first USAC Sprint Car victory of the year over at Canyon Speedway Park, and I had to actually go back and check that because I was like, oh, man, he's run so well all year, and but yet Saturday was your first victory, but good timing on this West Coast trip to pick it up.
Yeah, but after the first night, you know, we qualified good and ran, you know, won our heat race and everything, and then when it come feature time, we just wasn't really all that familiar with really essentially, I don't know if you want to call it dirt or sand out here, and you know, we just learned from that first night, and you know, knew we wasn't going to make that mistake again, and you know, luckily we got out front pretty early in the feature there on Saturday night, and you know, when I started catching lap cars at you know, it started changing pace with me a little bit, and I kind of noticed that. And, you know, almost all at the same time, you know, Tracy Hines poked his nose underneath me, and, you know, it's kind of showing me where the rubber is at. And luckily, you know, it just all come right, you know, right at the right time. And, you know, he was just able to move down and protect and just hang on for the win.
And how different is Canyon compared to a lot of stuff you race in Indiana? Is there anything you can compare it to?
Yeah, it's you know, we don't go up to Gas City that often, but it definitely reminds me of that place. And, you know, maybe that's why we struggled a little bit the first night, you know, because we struggled quite a bit at Gas City. And, you know, we figured some stuff out there during sprint week, and that's somewhat what we did the second night. You know, just kind of took what we learned and, you know, what it felt like we needed to do and just applied it. And it worked out pretty good, you know, the same here, as, you know, as well as it does back at some of the places at home.
Chase Stockton joining us. And you have a knack, it seems like, for coming on late in the year. And it seems like fall is like your season. What, can you test that to anything? Why do you think, well, a lot of small teams maybe necessarily don't go as well at the end of the year due to resources or whatever? It seems like you guys get stronger towards the end of the year.
Yeah, I don't know. That's one of the things, you know, coming up racing, I've always been somewhat of a slow learner. So I almost wonder if that has something to do with it. But, no, this year we started out pretty strong in Florida, had a, you know, a couple podium finishes down there, and ran, you know, pretty good when we come back home, and actually had the USAC National points lead there for a little while. And, you know, just kind of had a few bad nights, you know, motor problems here and there, and just things, you know, it's kind of out of our control. So, but, you know, we've had a pretty strong year this year and come close to winning quite a few of them. And, but it always seems like, you know, late in the year we can usually pick off one or two for some reason.
And you are sitting fifth in the points right now. It's been a really good season. It seems like everywhere I go, you've been in the mix. What's the secret to doing that maybe with a family-owned team? You're going against a lot of factory-backed operations, a lot of large operations, and you guys are near the front almost every night. When you're doing that as a small family-owned team, what are some of the things you have to do to keep that car up front?
Yeah, we got a few really, really good sponsors behind us, you know, Spear Tank and Trailer Company out of Ohio. And, you know, without people like him, Crescent Electric, you know, those guys, they put a lot of money into this deal, and, you know, it makes it easier on us. And, you know, that's, kind of my main focus this year is, you know, running the whole USAC, sprint car schedule, you know, just kind of make myself better and, you know, learn what we need to do as a team to maybe, you know, in the next year or two, be able to win a championship with them. And, you know, I think we got a pretty good start on it. We're just not quite there yet, you know, but hopefully next year will go a little bit smoother, and we can win a few more races, you know, earlier on in the season maybe, and be right there at the end again next year.
And, you know, it's been a big, you know, past year for you. You became a dad. How does becoming a father change you as a race car driver?
I don't know that it has. For me, you know, that's what a lot of people say, you know, you kind of lose some drive or anything. I don't know if, I don't think I've lost any of that or not, but, anything, I think, you know, staying up those long hours and everything, you know, taking care of him a little bit, you know, just throughout the night, it almost makes you focus a little bit more, because it almost seems easy, I think, you know, try to stay focused in a race car after, you know, sleeping 3 or 4 hours a night, and, definitely makes you appreciate it, that's for sure.
Chase Stockton, appreciating sleep as a new father. And you've managed to start accomplishing a lot, you know, in your short career. What's next on Chase Stockton's sprint car bucket list? Is there a particular race you really want to win? Something other than the USAC championship, that's a pretty obvious answer. Is there a particular race you haven't won yet that you really want to get under your belt?
Yeah, that's you know, winning a USAC sprint car race at Terre Haute, that was definitely one of the things on the bucket list, and just winning a USAC feature, period. And, you know, now that I kind of surpassed, you know, a couple of the goals I had, you know, I'd really like to, you know, win a main event, USAC main event at Eldora Speedway. And this year, it's Four Crown Nationals. We actually had a really strong run going, you know, it was running pretty solid second, and we ended up breaking the rocker arm. So, but I think, you know, we had a really good chance to win that, and that's, I'd say, probably one of my biggest goals, and, you know, one of the things I want to accomplish is definitely getting a USAC main event win at Eldora Speedway.
And that's a place that it seemed like almost from day one you got comfortable at. And a lot of people, it says they take them a few tries to, it takes a few tries to get comfortable at Eldora, but, man, it seems like you took, like, a duck to water to that place.
Yeah, I don't really know why that is either, you know, just, you know, throughout the years, you know, I pretty well started racing at Tri-State Speedway down in Hobstad, Indiana. And even though, you know, it's a lot slower of a place than what Eldora is, you know, by far, You know, that's just one of the places where I learned to, you know, run the cushion right up against the wall, and sometimes even, you know, like down there, it's right on the wall, and, you know, that's somewhat, you know, kind of has the same characteristics as Eldora, so that might be, you know, one of the reasons why I caught on so quick there. But, you know, that had a lot of people tell me, you know, kind of jokingly, to a certain extent, you know, the closer you get to the wall, less it's going to hurt when you hit it, so just kind of went with that, and just tried to, you know, make as quick and straight and smooth laps as I possibly can around that place.
And it translated some good runs at Eldora. Chase Dockin joining us. And, you know, we're starting to get to the end of the year. What do your prospects look like for next season right now?
Well, right now, you know, we have all our main sponsors back on again, and still yet to finalize some other ones, but it looks like we're going to actually have a little bit more help for next season. So we definitely plan on doing the full USAC sprint car deal again, and you know, we might have some things in the works to do another, you know, one of the other USAC series right now, but just can't really say for sure right now. So, but that's in the works as well. And, you know, I'll also be driving Chris Gentry's 2X car for local Indiana shows like MSCS and, you know, just kind of wherever we decide to go with it. So there should be a lot of races on our schedule for next year.
And keep him busy with you. What's something that Chase Dockin enjoys away from the racetrack? What's one of the things that is maybe your first go-to hobby or something you do when you're not with working on the race car or actually driving the race car and what little time that is?
Not a whole lot, really. It's just kind of spend some time with family. And you know, here the last year or so, we've, you know, made some new friends, you know, where we moved to there, Elizabethtown, Indiana, and we like to kind of do some trap shooting and stuff like that now, and that's kind of something new to me, because, you know, up until this year, I hadn't really ever shot a gun before in my life, so, but that's definitely one of the hobbies I picked up that we enjoy doing. So we go out and, you know, shoot whatever kind of gun we can find and have a good time doing it.
And that is definitely a way to relax away from the race, just to track. Well, Chase, I know you have a couple of people to thank that's made this season possible for you.
Yeah, definitely. First and foremost, I thank Tom Berkey, Superior Tank and Trailer Company, Crescent Electric Supply Network Electric, Butler Built Seats, Angle Buildings, D&D Oil Company, Impact, Race Flare. You know, those guys definitely make things a lot easier on us trying to, you know, kind of run this team on our own. And, you know, like just last week here, getting the win here at Canyon, that's what it's all about for them too, so. They definitely enjoy seeing the 32 car in the winner's circle.
And it's good to have partners like that. Well, Chase, it's been fun to watch your progress over the past several seasons, and look forward to seeing you race again next year. Best of luck at the upcoming Oval Nationals, and don't get in too much trouble at Vegas, because you do still have that one more race to go there.
Yeah, I think I'll just sightsee and both keep that money in the bank. So. I don't think I'd be very good at gambling anyway.
Yeah, that slot machine's not going to buy you a right rear. They don't build those big buildings because people walk out of there with a lot of money. So,
no.
All right, well, Chase, thanks for taking time out to join us, and best of luck.
Yep, thanks for having me.
All right, Chase Dockin, a very nice young man, joining us on the line. And he really did take the Eldora well, and everywhere. It seemed like as soon as he got on the USAC Tour, he was fast almost right off the bat. And he had a little stretch a couple years ago where I said he's going to get that first win pretty soon. And it was not even a week after that we rode it, he got it. And very nice. And if you ever have a chance, make sure to visit them in the pit area when you're at the racetrack. One of the most personable young men in our sport today. And that is going to wrap up this edition of TJ Slideways Live. I want to thank Dave Argerite, Chase Dockin for joining us, and all of you for your input that we talked about in the first segment about planning the 2014 season. We're going to do this again next Monday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. Thank you and good night.
Thank you for listening to this edition of TJ Slideways Live. listening to this edition of TJ Slideways Live.